Following is a lecture given by His Holiness Devamrita Swami on Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, 1st Chapter, text number 26, recorded on the 7th of August 2014 in Melbourne, Australia.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 1. Questions by Vidura. Text 26. Kachchit Purana Purushausvanabhya Padmanuvritieha Kalavatirna Asata Urbhya Kushalam Vidhaya Pratakshana Kushalam Shurage. Translation. Please tell me whether the original personalities of Godhead, who incarnated themselves at the request of Brahma, who is born out of the lotus flower from the Lord, and who have increased the prosperity of the world by elevating everyone, are doing well in the house of Shura Singh. Purport. Lord Krishna and Balaram are not two different personalities of Godhead. God is one without a second, but he expands himself in many forms without their being separate from one another. They are all planar expansions. The immediate expansion of Lord Krishna is Baladev. And Brahma, born from the lotus flower from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, is an expansion of Baladev. This indicates that Krishna and Baladev are not subjected to the regulations of the universe. On the contrary, the whole universe is under their subjugation. They appeared at the request of Brahma to liberate the burden of the world, and they relieved the world by many superhuman activities so that everyone became happy and prosperous. Without the grace of the Lord, no one can become happy and prosperous. Because the happiness of the family of the Lord's devotees depends on the happiness of the Lord, Vidura first of all inquired about the well-being of the Lord. Om Ganatirmanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Shakshur Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. What is the situation here? I hope you all are up to speed with what is going on, because it is a very intense part of Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is intense. Srimad Bhagavatam is the concentrated bliss of hearing and chanting about Krishna. And as we often explain, Sanatan Goswami states that every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is flooded with Krishna prema. You'll find that statement in the Krishna Lila Stava. Bearing this in mind, we approach Srimad Bhagavatam and we hear. We approach submissively. The other day we were speaking about how, in order to understand Krishna's pastimes, we need to humbly accept that we don't really know what love is. Someone who's actually materially exhausted is not simply someone who is penniless. Poverty-stricken. To be materially exhausted means you are aware that you don't know what love is and you don't know what pleasure is. Furthermore, you don't know what success is. when you have accepted those three things, that you don't know what love is, you don't know what pleasure is, and you don't know what success is, then indeed you are materially exhausted and you can easily approach Krishna. Whom, as Kunti Devi says, Tam Akinchana Gotra, he's easily approached. She addressed Krishna directly. You're easily approached by those who are materially exhausted. Whereas those who are puffed up by material opulences, they cannot approach you with feeling. So the material opulences, Janma, good birth, Aishvarya, wealth, Shruta, learning, Sri, personal beauty, these opulences magnify your sense of knowing what you're doing and feeling competent. And that confidence comes out in your belief or your assumption that you know what is love, you know what is pleasure, and you know what success is. So we can examine ourselves to see how much we have bought in to materialistic conceptions. Consciously or subconsciously. And therefore there are impediments in our approaching Krishna. And Bhagavatam is the literary presence of Krishna, especially meant for Kali Yuga. Remember the question asked in the first canto by the sages at Naimisharanya. They asked Sutta Goswami, what are we going to do? Krishna has departed for his own abode. How will the world understand what is Dharma? And the answer they received was, Srimad Bhagavatam has arisen, brilliant as the sun. It will dispel all the darkness. Again, in order to approach Krishna, and that means in order to approach the Bhagavatam, indeed, to maximally approach the Hare Krishna mantra, we need to abandon our false confidence that we know what is love, we know what is pleasure, and we know what is success. If you can toss those notions out of your life, you save yourself so much trouble. It is the nature of the conditioned soul to clutch on to things. And I know. There's some things I know. I may not know everything, but I have experience. To truly be materially exhausted means that you're willing to jettison your conceptions. And that way you can quickly become purified. Instead of holding on to material conceptions, we want to hold on to Krishna's lotus feet. And holding on to Krishna's lotus feet means holding on to devotional service in the association of devotees. Hearing and chanting about Krishna is the foundation of all devotional service. Vidura and Uddhava, their paths have just crossed. The situation is very dramatic and very overwhelming. Both of them know what's going on, that the Yadu dynasty has departed, Krishna has departed. Both of them are aware of that. Yet, you see, Bhagavatam is full of spiritual culture. So, in such a situation of calamity, the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty and, of course, the disappearance of Lord Krishna, in that kind of situation, you don't immediately just cut to the chase as one would do in the cultures we are familiar with today. You gracefully and gradually approach the very troublesome matter at hand. So, Vidura actually knew that the Yadu dynasty and Krishna had departed. But the shock is so great for him that even though he knows, he doesn't know. In other words, he hasn't processed it yet, we would say. He knows, but he hasn't fully assimilated. Therefore, he's asking Uddhava about all the Yadus. You'll see so many verses coming up in which Vidura asks about this Yadu, that Yadu. Although Vidura knows they're gone. But basically, in other words, he's asking for support and help. Let's try to process this great calamity together. That's basically what he's saying to Uddhava. So even though he's asking questions about all the members of the Yadu dynasty, he knows they're gone. But it's the nature of responding to tragedy that you seek ways how to process the situation gradually. And so Bhagavatam is full of grace, Bhagavatam is full of poise, it's full of finesse. And that's what you're seeing here. You're seeing spiritual culture, real culture. You're seeing the utmost finesse in relations. You might say the first inquiry that Vidura makes is about Krishna and Balaram. He asks, are they doing well? Katakshana kushalam shura gehe. They're the elevators of everyone's prosperity. Are they doing well in the house of Shurasena? Are they doing well in that dynasty? How can you ask about the welfare of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? If Vidura is actually one who knows the absolute truth, and certainly Uddhava is, knowing the Supreme Absolute Truth, then why would Vidura ask about the welfare of the Supreme Absolute Truth? He's doing it out of prema, out of pure love. Krishna is self-sufficient. He needs no one to look after his welfare. Yet, out of love, the devotees ask about Krishna's welfare. We spoke a few days ago about how love is the topmost dynamic in the topmost portion of the spiritual world. Not our material conceptions of what is right and what is wrong. We briefly discussed how when Krishna gazes upon the beautiful young ladies of Vrindavan, sometimes he becomes so overwhelmed that he starts milking a bull instead of a cow. And his dearmost consort, Srimati Radharani, she sometimes becomes bewildered, blinded by love, and embraces a tamal tree because the color of the tamal tree resembles Krishna. Is this a mistake? No, the topmost principle of Goloka Vrindavan is pure love. We discussed, remember, about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu seeing a sand dune as he walked on the beach at Jagannath Puri, but he mistook it for a Govardhan hill and started running toward it. Is that a mistake? No, that is the way of pure love, that you see the beloved everywhere. Similarly, out of pure love, Vidura is asking about the well-being of Krishna and Balaram, even though they don't need anyone to ask about their well-being. We read in the purport, without the grace of the Lord, no one can become happy and prosperous. Because the happiness of the family of the Lord's devotees depends on the happiness of the Lord. Vidura, first of all, inquired about the well-being of the Lord. So besides Vidura's being affected by prema, and therefore he's asking about the well-being of the Supreme Self-Sufficient One, he's also, Vidura is acknowledging that we can only be indirect enjoyers. Now this is a tough pill to swallow. You can just feel your conditioning rising up in you. You are the direct enjoyer. You can feel that. For so many births, this conditioning has been with us. Yet it is the source of all our problems. This contamination, this fever that burns in us to directly be the enjoyer. It's something that can only be purified at the root by immersion in selfless devotional service based on hearing and chanting about Krishna. And that way the disease will be destroyed at the root. Otherwise, not possible. And you can just feel the enormous habits built up over the years, over the lifetimes. That happiness means I directly enjoy. With my mind and my senses, I interact with what's around me. And if that interaction is favorable for my gratification, that means I'm enjoying. So conditioned life means to be affected by this illusion that I just reach out. Enjoyment is there directly. It's a total mirage. Common example given is like the hand lustily looking at a glove jamin and thinking, the hand is the enjoyer. And the hand grabs the glove jamin and squeezes it to enjoy it. Can the hand enjoy the glove jamin in that way? I've got it. The hand thinks it's all. It's my glove jamin. Feel that juice. It's an illusion. In order for the hand to relish the glove jamin, what does it have to do? It has to bring the glove jamin to the mouth. And then, when the glove jamin goes into the stomach and is assimilated, the whole body feels nourished. In that way, the hand is the indirect enjoyer of the glove jamin. So what is your hand going to do? Go on strike? If I cannot directly enjoy the glove jamin, forget it. I'm not bringing it to the mouth. No, it is the constitutional position of the hand to assist the whole body by bringing the food to the mouth, which is the authorized place for food to be processed. Similarly, we cannot be direct enjoyers. And the whole bhakti process is meant to work on our contamination. That enjoyment is there. I just reach out with my mind and senses. This is the depth of ignorance. And this is what's troubling us. So if we're going to cleanse that contamination, we really need an aggressive program to recuperate our health, to regain our health. You can't take it casually. Yeah, so I think I'm the direct enjoyer. It happens, you know. After all, everyone's like that. What do you want out of me? No, you have to be proactive, recognizing the disease and working on it. And then we can enter more deeply into this statement that Because the happiness of the family of the Lord's devotees depends on the happiness of the Lord, Vidura first of all inquired about the well-being of the Lord. Just think, you're dependent on someone else's happiness. You don't like that. Materialistic society trains you to think you are the independent enjoyer. Your happiness depends on you. Shape your life. Be all that you can be. Adjust, arrange, manage, organize for you. And if situations and persons don't fit your program for happiness, you know what to do. Get rid of them. Throw them out. This is our conditioning, which is so deep in this age of Kali. Even India now is being overloaded with this kind of mentality. To realize that we are dependent on someone else's happiness. We are dependent on Krishna being pleased. And to please Krishna, as we spoke the other day, that pleasing Krishna depends on pleasing Krishna's devotee. In this section of Bhagavatam, you're going to read about the interactions between these two greatest devotees, Vidura and Uddhava. After Vidura concludes his long list of inquiries about particular members of the Yadu dynasty, he's going to ask, again, O friend, O my friend, please therefore chant the glories of the Lord, who is meant to be glorified in the places of pilgrimage. So Vidura's made his presentation, beginning with asking about the welfare of Krishna Balaram, and then asking about so many members of the Yadu dynasty, and then he concludes his presentation by saying, now, my dear friend, please chant Krishna's glories. And what happens? Uddhava is silent. He's frozen. Because by hearing Vidura's questions about Krishna, Uddhava suddenly remembers intensely, more intensely than usual, his feelings of separation from Krishna. So he freezes, he's silent. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Uddhava is silent for 48 minutes. He knows. And during that time, Uddhava is actually not present in the material world. Because just by hearing inquiries about Krishna, Uddhava's consciousness is in the topmost planet of the spiritual world. And particularly, he's in Dwarka, on Krishna Loka. Just by hearing the questions about Krishna. How is that possible? What is the technological mechanism by which this is happening? The mechanism is that remembrance of Krishna is the same as the presence of Krishna. This is what Uddhava is demonstrating. This is how powerful bhakti is. By hearing the questions from Vidura, Uddhava remembered Krishna more intensely. It's not that he ever forgot Krishna, but it's just that the subject matter of Krishna is newer and newer at every moment. So the questions of Vidura provoked a further expansion of Uddhava's Krishna consciousness. So much so that Uddhava lost consciousness of his presence on the earthly realm and was absorbed in being in Dwarka, in Krishna Loka. These are the mysteries of Bhagavatam. This is the power of the bhakti spiritual technology, which is unsurpassed. It's not about religious belief. Uddhava is actually transported by way of the mechanism of remembering Krishna. And then, after a period of time, Uddhava is once again present in this realm, and he delivers his dramatic opening words, Krishna Dhumani Nimloche. What does that mean? The sun, S-U-N, the sun of the world has set. And our house, meaning the Yadu dynasty, has been swallowed by time. Very most beautiful artistic way of saying Krishna is gone and the Yadu dynasty is gone. Krishna Jumani Nimloche. The sun of the world, that orb that illuminates everything, has set. In other words, we are all now plunged in darkness. And the unsurpassable Yadu dynasty has been swallowed by the snake of time. What more can I say? The more we read this section of the Bhagavatam, the more we're able to feel those dynamics. It's super intense. And notice Uddhava's maximally cultured reply. Even in relaying the conclusion, which Vidura already knew, but still. Even in relaying that conclusion, Uddhava speaking with maximum artistry, the sun of the world has set. What more can be said? We are now plunged in darkness. Another point in the verse today is Krita Shino, the elevators of everyone's prosperity. How is it that our prosperity depends on Krishna and Balaram? Our prosperity, according to the materialistic mindset, depends on our own endeavors. Prosperity depends on which political party you put in office. Just like now, the new Prime Minister of India is promising prosperity. I'll take away all the barriers to business, just like I did in Gujarat. Prosperity will happen all over India. And people are so foolish. They think that prosperity depends on politicians or economists. And then when they hear Srimad Bhagavatam, that the elevators of everyone's prosperity are Krishna and Balaram, please be practical. We believe in God. We worship the gods. We put a little something in the hundi. But how is it that prosperity depends on Krishna and Balaram? As a practical reality, how can that be? The great illusion that human society operates under is that prosperity and happiness can be achieved by skillful manipulation of matter. If you know the right process for manipulating matter, you can generate prosperity and happiness. They think this so much that even in their dealings with nature, they treat nature like it's inanimate, mechanical matter. In this way, believing human beings are their own key to prosperity, they plunge the world into more and more chaos, economically, politically, environmentally. But because some parts of the world temporarily seem to be a little bit enjoying, you forget about the suffering that's in most of the world. The sufferings that people take for granted in most parts of the world, we'd be horrified by if they happened here. Just like I've been communicating with devotees in Ukraine, because the part of Ukraine where all that trouble is now, I would regularly travel in. So, civilians are being killed in this civil war. Women, children. You see video clips of apartment buildings devastated by military warfare. And then, of course, one Malaysian Airlines passenger plane was flying high in the air, far above the conflict. But evidently the rebels shot it down, thinking it was the Ukrainian government seeking to attack them. 300 people dead. 300 people on their way from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur. Never thinking anything like that would happen. So devotees were writing me, amidst all this going on, that they were describing their situation as, we're having a little problems, and we're having a few problems in our area, a little bit of political instability. They always use that term, political instability. So therefore, Maharaj, we realize you can't come due to this few problems we're having here and the political instability. They are so accustomed to living in what we call bad karma alley, in between Russia and Germany. And they're so used to being kicked around and obliterated that even when, you know, all this chaos and all these hostilities are going on, all this combat, there's a little bit of political instability in our area. So it just shows you there's different standards of heaven and hell. So because such things are not happening at this time in Australia, we think, oh, life is good. You look at a place like Singapore, prosperous. But how many of you would have wanted to live in Singapore less than 100 years ago, 70 years ago? The place was totally hellish. It's at the epicenter of World War II in the Pacific. But fortunes change, and then everyone thinks, oh, everything is nice. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us a perspective on the age of Kali that is so important. Otherwise, we're so quick to lose our vision in the dense darkness of Kali Yuga. We must have this light. And by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing the reactions of Krishna's devotees to whatever Krishna does, we develop affinity, we develop attraction for our natural position as secondary or indirect enjoyers. The position becomes attractive to us once again. Let Krishna enjoy first, and we take the remnants. Krishna's enjoyment is the only priority. That's the Vrindavan principle. They don't know anything else in Vrindavan except Krishna's enjoyment. All right. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.